This is Gemma Redgrave, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
This is Gallifrey Public Radio, a weekly podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of Doctor Who. We travel through classic and new episodes, explore the extended universe, and play a few games from time to time. We do discuss news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but we'll warn you before anything considered spoilers comes up.
Welcome to episode 445 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we may not know which houses are giving away the full-size candy bars next week, but we know a few favorites will be getting on television that night. I'm Haley.
I'm Jay.
I'm Julie.
And I'm Kier. This week, we're kicking our classic rewatch schedule months down the road, as the Fuller trailer for Series 13 has been finally broadcast. So much to parse, so much to anticipate.
We should take a second to correct something in last week's conversation, and that has to do with the count of episodes and specials under Chris Chibnall that remain going into 2022.
So in our eagerness to pad the viewing season, we calculated that 8 episodes were incoming and 3 specials, when in fact the Series 13 arc will be 6 interconnected stories and 2 holiday specials under Chibnall's oversight.
The third special will be a part of the BBC Centennial, and so while it may be a full Who story, it won't have the same holiday alignment we've had with Christmas, New Year's, or even Easter in the past. By all accounts, this will be Chibnall and Whittaker's departure and the regeneration from 13 to 14.
So the Flux story, as they're coining it, is a 6-hour epic tale and 2 specials to follow in some form of dramatic and probably equally huge scale wind down. And then the regeneration, likely in October of 2022, when the BBC officially hits 100 years. Now, some filming was still taking place around Wales just this past week, so that's wild as well. And at least we have this completed trailer to stare at and analyze the heck out of.
So what are some of the obvious details we get from the trailer?
Lots of Yaz. Yaz in historical costumes. Looks like early 20th century, maybe. Some of the outfits that she was wearing.
Lots of layers, high necks.
Yeah, yeah. Button collars and things. And historical figures as well. Couldn't tell exactly what periods they were coming from, but you had those couple of people that were, you know, they would just flash quickly to some of the supporting cast that had been announced for this season, and I see as much going on present day from some of the backdrops as I do some of the historical tiebacks that look like we're going back at least to 19th century, so maybe.
I was gonna say it's from everything we've seen. I didn't really notice anything as long as we're talking Earth history. Anything that goes back further than like 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, very colonial British look to a lot of this.
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously a lot of off-world stuff too. A lot of alien planets. That shot with the orange cloud sort of dust thing that's coming around the horizon line, I couldn't really tell whether that was supposed to be Earth underneath or could have been another planet caught in whatever this flux threat might be.
I tried to pause and zoom in, and it did have a lot of clouds, but I don't know if we'd be able to say definitely Earth or not.
Right, right. On that note, though, from what effects we do have, effects and costumes and props and things, like all of the technical aspects of this look like they have shot through the roof just in this past, you know, from one season to the next. Maybe all this lockdown has allowed for a lot of rendering time from DNEG. Right.
Well, they took 12 episodes of budget and put it into 6 episodes. So there you go.
This is also true.
Our servers are just sitting there waiting to render. It is great. Because, the quality of it just looks amazing.
Well, we saw Jodie Whittaker on the Graham Norton show just recently, and she was going off about how this is, it's like a 6-hour movie, so they really did kind of have to ramp it up to reach that quality.
Right, kind of treat it as such, which means if that's the case, and they sort of, it's written as a cohesive unit, it was shot as a cohesive unit. I think Chibnall's name is really all over the thing. There might be one or two other writers that get sort of bylines through this, but this is, again, for good or for ill, this is Chris Chibnall's writing for this particular story. But it means that from a production standpoint and a post-production standpoint, you treat it as one canvas. So it's all going to have that nice, consistent look. The music that was just in the trailer, Sigo Nakanola's work on this has a high, kind of, I don't know, I picked up on a higher level of orchestration, a fuller orchestral sound to it, much more dramatic and driving for obvious reasons. You want to make sure this is coming out with a bang. But he normally does a lot of ethereal.
It's got a little bit more punch than we're used to from him, yeah.
Right. But it's not a Murray Gold, like, bash you over the head with a bassoon kind of thing.
Yeah. Exactly. No, that's in the actual episode.
Murray Gold is the hidden villain. He comes out.
Speaking of villains.
Yeah, one of the things that really stood out in this is the Santaran presence. I mean, previously we've seen like a Santaran warship in orbit. Now we're seeing like multiples in, like, you know, the docks and stuff. It's
could you tell, I mean, it's only up there for anything we refer to, it's only up there for about a second and a half,
right?
But you've got all of them on modern docks, right? It looks like, you know, it could have been along the Thames somewhere, but I couldn't tell whether they were docked or whether they were being built, like they had a hangar kind of thing to build these things.
It's hard to say. I mean, we're not even sure if it's meant to be on Earth. It might just be an Earth-like backdrop on an alien planet.
I don't know. I think some of the buildings that they were mentioned, like, that was a known location. I thought some of the signage and things wasn't English.
Either way, it means that they're there to stay.
Mm-hmm. They have been there for a long time.
Right. They're parked.
That would be interesting to see colonial British forces fighting another colonizing force.
Oh, yeah, right. Empire versus empire. it's an interesting point. It had been sort of announced or given to us as sort of throw the fans a bone a bit that Centaurans were going to be back. And when Jody did that quick cut in the thing, you know, you have to help us, the flux is coming, Centaurans, weeping angels, right? She name checks those previously, and now we get to see them again in considerable numbers. One is bad enough. Two is a really rough night. There were like six or seven out there.
Yeah,
you can't make them stand on opposite sides of the TARDIS anymore to trap them. There's more than can be tricked.
Yeah, they have to fly like the Blue Angels, always in formation, now, always facing the same way. Bob, don't look at Lou. Lou, don't look at Petey.
Or we're going to need a new TARDIS. A new TARDIS that has six sides.
There we go. Wouldn't that be more modern to like present day? I know police boxes still have the same shape, but what if New Earth has hexagonal
police boxes.
Phone
six episodes, six sides. It's the hex. This is how we tie into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Amazing. One other note on the Centaurans is obviously when they do that pan up from the stirrups, right? And it pans up the horse, and then you see an old school, really old school Centauran.
He's Super Potato.
Yeah, this is back. This is Time Warrior. This is like Pertwee and Commander Lynx.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you rectify that?
Because it looks cool.
The armor is a little bit different. Like the pauldron has a little bit more shape to it. It's almost as if you took the Commander Lynx character and allowed him to actually succeed on Earth and fast forward a number of years. How would they have evolved? Really,
holy
like
crap.
I'm wondering if that might not be the case.
Jay, you just kind of poked me in the brain on something. Think about this for a second. This idea of flux, right? And we didn't really know what this whole flux thing was going to mean. What if the flux was some sort of a distortion of the timeline that keeps the Doctor historically from being able to make some of the, or to have some of the successes along the way. And it becomes kind of a Marvel what if, but it all comes smashing down on present day. What if the Time Warrior in that aspect, what if Sontar was actually able to get itself entrenched in, medieval Europe, which would make sense when we see the battlefield later. We'll get to that momentarily. But that, the return of the Weeping Angels, those little things where certain enemies were historically put back in their place or outright vanquished, what if they kept a toehold? What if the Flux was a matter of the, you know, the Doctor's personal timeline had been screwed up in some way?
That would map with the moment we see her and Yaz hanging upside down, and she says, I can't help but feeling this is partially my fault. So it's not something where it's directly connected to what they've just done, but it is her or their history.
Yeah, it's centered around her.
Yeah, so it's their story unfolding. And so for her in that moment to go, it could be me. I'll take that one.
What do we make of these new beings? I'm not going to call them adversaries because we don't really know who they are or what side they're on or anything. With the broken skin, like I'm going to call them geodes, just because I don't know whether or not they are the ravagers that were name checked last week. Mm-hmm. But these ones with the crystals coming out of their heads, and the one female character who has the split in her head, and she's literally got the geode crystals in the brain pan.
Were they born that way and they grow from rocks, or is it a disease that turns them inside out to a geode rock?
Oh, I don't know.
It's and the interaction that we do see between one of these characters and the Doctor, it's hard to tell. Is it adversarial? Like, they're having a conversation. Is it that moment of like laying out the plan or giving the ultimatum or something like that? Or is it two people that, you know, like, hey, we're on the same side of this conflict for better or ill? Like, there's no way to tell given what we saw.
That's true. I'm just super psyched to the fact that, and I have no idea why or how this ties into anything, but we've got Ood.
Yeah. Love an Ood.
Yeah. And not like the free Ood either. The ones with the voice box thing, the ones like in the gray jumpsuit from The Impossible Planet, Satan Pit, that kind of thing.
Another thing again, where the Doctor had a critical role that maybe that she didn't have her effect on the timeline now.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That could be that.
Guys, we don't have enough time to rewatch the entire series.
This is what they want you to do, but they didn't give us enough lead time within 3 weeks.
Marketing department.
Not with that attitude.
And I think on that note, too, I think the Cybermen that we saw were a little bit of an older style as well. So not the most recent ones.
Yeah, because most recently they got cybermasterfied.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
I'll have to go back and take a look in the Timeless Children. When you get towards the close of the Timeless Children arc, the soldiers, the foot soldiers and infantry that were being revived from their stasis before they were upgraded by the Master, did they have the headlamps? And because this is their armor was modernized, so we're not going back to like Mundasian Cybermen, but they did have some elements that were not,
they looked like mid to late 70s Cybermen.
In a sense, yeah. If you took
some changes, that, yes, but right. That was the overall feel.
Yeah. So again, back to Haley's point, is this a matter of, you know, at that point, boop, if you just grab right around, Army of Ghosts kind of thing, what if that was all happening?
Or, is this the 10th planet that the Doctor never actually stopped them? Because the Cybermen continually evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So is this that same group that just never got stopped in the first place, and this is what happens when they
Yeah, it's left? Almost like you took an older Cyberman design and then modernized that, not the same way that they modernized them before.
Right. They didn't have to dramatically adapt to try their next scheme. Their last scheme worked, and they are just updating that on that design or that iteration using modern materials.
Cyber OS 13.
Yeah, pretty much.
Where they're going to put the buttons back up and take the
13 to 13 max, because they didn't look taller or wider than they were before.
They still fit in your pocket?
No,
but just barely.
You're gonna need bigger pockets. There's one other thing that puzzles me a little bit, and that is this one species that, according to BBC's press releases and everything, they are saying, "Oh, we hope you enjoyed this warrior dog species that they're calling the Carvanista, or just calling Carvanista. I don't know if it's the Carvanista or not.
You mispronounced Chewbacca.
Well, is it though? Because it also looks like a Boston Terrier.
I think. Reminded me more of the one. I just totally forgot Mel Brooks' Star Wars movie.
Oh, you're Barf. Talking about Barf.
Yeah.
Bartholomew. Yes. Well, what's your name? Barf. Your full name? Bartholomew.
We actually had the moment, like, as soon as that character popped up on screen, we kind of both looked at each other here in the house and were like, that looks like our dog Jelly. Like, almost exactly.
It does. It was nice of you to lend Jelly for the artist rendering.
So here's a funny thing. 48 hours after that trailer aired, somebody went out and sculpted the thing and did a 3D modeling and did like a little minifigures, little 4-inch minifigures of this freaking thing. And they're like, here's the space dog from the new season of Doctor Who. Space dog? But all right. So I did a little research on this because I didn't really understand where they were going with this Carvanista thing. And I did a quick search. And the first thing that came up was a talent agency who apparently has the contract for the actor who's the Carvanista, right? Or in the suit. You think, okay, well, you know, you can't really tell under all that makeup. So good on this person. And I call up this page. And it's an actor, I believe, I stand to be corrected on this, named Craig Ells. Craig Ells, that guy's face on his headshot, is the dude who's reading the horoscope to Dan in the Dan announcement blip, which means Dan's boss is a dog. That's the way I see it.
Or hear me out, there's only like 12 actors in England. And so they had to recast him, or they cast him for this and said, hey, while you're at it, take off the makeup. We need you to read something off a phone real quick for a little quick blurb.
Stick this rug on your face.
No. He was hired for the rug first. And then they said, take it off because you're right there and we might as well pay you to also do this role.
Maybe.
Would you like to work one more day?
It took him a while to get
day.
The mask off and you saw him coming out of the trailer. Like,
The guy we hired for this bit part didn't show up. Do you want another day of work?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Because that creature, this thing, is the one who's sitting there guard in front of all the cages a split second before we see Dan behind bars.
Okay, so what if it's the timeline flipping somehow and in the main timeline and then it gets flipped and it is the same actor but two roles because
we've seen lots of villains with like appearance manipulators. So he in real life looks like a dog person. And he uses an appearance manipulator to read a horoscope.
Maybe he's human and he does some sort of weird sci-fi LARPing as a dog warrior on weekends.
The dog thing isn't even a new alien species. It's just his boss in cosplay.
We have gone completely off the rails.
Yes,
here,
we have.
So one other thing I'm super excited about then is seeing Vinder.
Yeah.
Very, I mean, we saw the interview with him, mm-hmm. so I think that was a good first introduction to a little bit more of what his character will be. But in this case, you got to see him in his ship doing a little action.
Yeah. I'm just glad to see Jacob Alexander with hair again. I don't know. And it does look kind of cool. I mean, his whole look is kind of cool. And he gets to utter some of the classic lines about, you know, what in the world is that? And it's taking a character who is probably already some sort of galactic traveler of sorts. He's got his own ship from what we understand because Jacob talked about it. He's like, I got my own ship and it's got controls and I got buttons and levers I can push. And he was really excited about that. But when he gets exposed to the greater life with the Doctor, everybody's left with the what? What is that thing? Who is that guy? Why are they shooting at us?
Well, what if he saves them from that weird void in the beginning and then sees the flux and says, I've never seen something like this before. What is that?
What's the flux?
Yeah.
Okay.
What the flux?
What the flux, man. So, all right, that kind of leads to a point I wanted to make, in that we know the visuals, we know the things that we saw on screen. This leaves us, as any good trailer should, with a lot of questions. Like, mm-hmm. what exactly that? What is the flux? It seems like, with the trailer, like, the doctor is asking, like, what is this? I don't know about it, kind of hinting at the flux.
I like our theory. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I like the idea of a disruption of the doctor's central timeline.
And it does seem to, like, with all the visuals and things like that, you see the rainbow pattern that we've seen through a lot of the stuff, like, yeah. coming apart and, like, threading out, almost like, you know, multiverse kind of thing. Oh, God, mm-hmm. we're back to the MCU again.
Who did it first?
This story's been production.
Was that a question or a statement?
A little bit.
Yes.
I think it's a very interesting way to pull all of the I love this type of stuff. So from what we know of Chibnall is that he is a fan. So having him come into it and wanting to grab all of these things that he's loved from Who as a history and as a universe, how else do you do that except for something like this?
This could also be very redeeming for Chris Chibnall in the eyes of a lot of fans who have sort of gotten a bit rankled about, well, Timeless Child and some of the things that threaten their precious canon.
Right.
So if this is a reestablishment of, no, this doctor is pivotal to the overall, you know, the full scope of this universe, because when the doctor's very efficacy historically is threatened or weakened in some way, she's the one that cements it again.
Well, and that we've seen things similar to this with the 10th Doctor, with Turn Left. Like, what happens if the doctor, you know, actually sacrifice themselves? Like, how do things play out after that? So this is kind of taking that story and blowing it out to a much larger scale, if we're accurate on our guessing here.
But that makes a bit of sense. If just take that instance in particular, the idea of if you've got 1800s British infantry, and that's the only the reason why I picked up on that is, you know, you've got the Sea of the Redcoats, and the very particular hat shape put me at about, you know, 1810, 1820 or so. Fields of that going up against thousands of Centaurans, which means they have been there for a while to bring in all of the forces that Lynx back in the 1400s said were going to be following after his scouting reports were complete. So if
or
that's
the case, establish the cloning technology they need to build the army.
Precisely. Now the doctor is seen in a couple blips later running across that destroyed field trying to get back to the TARDIS, right?
Where else would you park it?
Of course, right, of course. The middle of chaos. So if it's a matter of, you know, she's working her way back to try and find things that need to be set right, almost like the TVA, if you will. I'm sorry, I digress. if she puts down one little glowy box and runs away, that's done.
You were phrasing that, I went Quantum Leap, but you know.
Yeah, right? Oh, don't get me started on a Quantum Leap reboot.
The last episode of What If is this story.
Right? The thing that the only X factor in that whole thing, it would be this unusual species, mm-hmm. right? Figuring out whether they are a friend or foe, or whether they're actually someone who's asking for the doctor's help. Because we get this quick moment where they're standing in the middle of like this plane of nothingness, and she's talking to one of them, and that's when she's told, you know, this is our final fight, or fighting with us, fighting for us, against us, you know.
It's almost like the way that I put the pieces together is that black sandy wasteland mm-hmm. is the result of whatever the flux does, which is sort of disintegrate everything, which puts together from the beginning that sort of skull that was melting and flaking away
mm-hmm. yeah.
with the planet with that orange dust washing across it. So if they're meeting on a neutral zone to say, this is what happens if you don't help us, or see your future, this is the result of,
yeah.
that would make sense. And it that neatly wraps what they've given us, clearly there's six episodes. I hope that there's something more to it than that, because they just told us the whole story, and I'm not a writer, but if that sort of works together, and I realize I'm saying sort of a lot because it's a lot of unknowns.
It's all postulating.
Yeah. Then that, to me, that makes a little bit of sense, and I would like to hear that story because it does have a powerful meaning if we're pulling the Doctor out of it.
I kind of, and then I like Jay's point about even down from the subtleness of the logo or the title card manipulation and the idea of the flux being the thing that takes everything as you know it's supposed to progress, and what happens when that goes squirrely and just become...
What happens when you miss with the sacred timeline?
Precisely.
When it unravels, everything falls.
Call in the gators.
Yeah.
Gator master.
So with everything we've seen, the press releases and statements referencing the Flux series as this tight-knit epic story, are we trying to make Doctor Who a must-see event night? And can that be done in just 6 weeks with the rocky promotional marketing schema that we've seen so far?
I think based on what they've done with the marketing, the people that were already going to watch are going to watch, you know, regardless of what's being presented or how. And I think just in general, modern TV viewing audiences are going to watch it how they were going to watch it, and what kind of story you're telling doesn't really affect that.
If they hit it really hard in the first episode or two and it becomes something that Whovians are talking about adamantly, then you might get people to come back in for the back half of the event. But it's going to take 2, maybe 3 weeks of constant, like, oh my God, did you see what happened? For people to think, I can't wait for this to show up on the BBC iPlayer the next day. Like, I need to see it when it happens.
Right.
But all of that depends on it being a solid story from, like, the moment that it hits the ground.
Yeah.
Curtain up to curtain down.
You can't waste any time in that first episode getting pieces in place. You've got to establish a critical problem right off the jump, because not only do you have to ensure that you've got people who have bought in to where they know that this is going to be a six episode ride. But it also needs to be something that takes those, and there is a fair percentage of them, that are going to be hate watching.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term, that need to have something that they can sink their teeth into and say, oh, well, if you can't imagine where this is going to go, well, you're going to tune in next week to see where it's going to go so that you can gripe about it. But you're still part of those viewership numbers anyway, Dumbo. So suck it.
So kind.
No, you know what? I don't have any. I got no love lost for people that just sit there and they feel like they have something to say because what they have to say is just to crap all over other people that are.
If you're not enjoying watching the show, stop watching it.
Yeah.
Don't try and ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah. If you don't yuck my yum.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. That's a new one.
No, that's an old one.
I don't keep up with your TikTok-y kids these days. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't. What's a TikTok?
Exactly.
Look, it's a no bones day. It's fine. Let's just go ahead.
All right. So as we mentioned a couple of minutes ago, we had to make a correction on our episode count, right? We had our specials counted into our episodes proper. But that's going to mean, though, that we are going to be wrapping things up like within the first week of December rather than just prior to Yuletide season. Mm-hmm. So the PR officially from the BBC press department still reads 3 specials in 2022. So that means even if we're right about the New Year's Day as the first special, that's a 3 or 3.5, whatever, 4 week gap between episode 6 and that first special dropping on January 1. Does that change anything for us really, as far as the way we saw things kind of map out or how they were going to hit certain points over the Flux season and the specials?
I don't think so, because we had identified correctly that we would see a New Year's, a springtime, and then something around October-ish during 2022. It means that we get 2 less episodes right back to back to the New Year's, but I don't think that we're missing. The special is still there. We have time to digest it. Then we'll be introduced to whatever
Yeah.
And in general, Chibnall, instead of having his specials be something that's very like a standalone encapsulated thing, they've really attached to the story he was telling up to that point. And they're more of a continuation of that than I think we saw under previous showrunners.
Do we think then that the two specials following Series 13 immediately, do we think that those are going to be tied into this story almost like the conclusion, or do we think it's going to be like an epilogue, or is this going to be something completely separate?
I think kind of an epilogue, kind of the repercussions of whatever happened in the story that we're given in the 6-part flux.
Yeah, like some sort of a wind down. If they've been making it abundantly clear that Doctor Who Flux is a 6-hour epic saga, for all intents and purposes, then the two specials, the two subsequent specials, are the, not necessarily the wind down, but it's kind of a matter of maybe they're just going to be bottle stories, but they're sort of high impact, high drama as just sort of fun things to provide for the fandom at these intervals in the year, you know, this top of the new year, somewhere around late spring or so.
Whatever repercussions or final moments we get by the end of the 6th episode, I think they'll be reflected somehow. So something major will happen and they'll either reference it. It'll be the loss of someone, the gaining of someone important. So we'll see that play out maybe.
Yeah.
But we can't speak to any of that because we have no idea where it's going to go. But I think that allows the breathing room in between to let people feel whatever those big moments are and then have them be weighty but not the focus of the specials.
I feel like the way that they need to go about it is either if the flux is going to be wrapped up in 6 episodes, then it really either has to be completely separate. Otherwise, you run the risk of stealing the punch from what's coming after.
Sure.
Because if it is just the epilogue, then there is no tension left. It's not, you really can't build a whole thing out of that if you're just starting to wrap up story threads. So either it's completely separate so that it's its own threat, its own story, its own whatever, or you use Flux when Flux wraps up, it ends with a, oh crap, the whoever is back. And it leaves off with that cliffhanger leading into the specials. But again, that does take it to be its own special thing.
That's an interesting point. That could be something where, because one of the things that we have not seen or even given any space for yet in this whopping 70 seconds or so of content that we're dissecting the hell out of, is anything having to do with the status of Gallifrey and where the master and that manipulation is. It could very well be something where not having Gallifrey in existence is allowing some sort of really time manipulative force like a Flux to go out there and monkey with things. Flux gets resolved, whether it is an entity or a being or a species or whatever this thing really is. That all gets set to rights. And then in order to ensure that that does not repeat itself or just come about again in the past to bite you in the future, the Doctor has to handle the showdown with the Master again, differently, or something like that. So you could have 2 specials where you've got Sacha Dhawan back killing it, which could result in a 100th anniversary special
geek
regeneration.
Yeah.
A double regeneration.
Ooh,
you could have a Doctor and Master regeneration, and RTD comes rolling into town like Old Town Road kind of thing and just having a
pew, 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 pew.
You know what I like about a double regeneration is we could end not knowing for sure which one's the Doctor and which one's the Master, and they don't tell you until it comes back with RTD.
Holy
that would be
crap.
Amazing.
And one
Haley's
of them,
mouth to RTD's ears.
And
that's
one
genius.
Of them is a redhead. And you don't know.
Or they're both redheads.
And it's they just the do that, Weasley that, twins.
That Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man meme. You.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this all just sums up very nicely to know that, or to lead us to say that we don't know what's coming. This is a lot of stuff that got thrown at us, and none of it is conclusive. We have no clue what we're going into. I mean, we've got some solid guesses, but I mean, we don't know what's coming down the pike, and I'm excited about that.
Very excited. Now imagine what would have happened if they gave this to us 6 weeks ago.
I would have been rewatching a lot more Doctor Who over the last 6 weeks.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Buying your Blu-rays.
And I was about to say you would have had too much time, but then Haley jumped in with the appropriate comment.
I think the only thing that we can be certain of with this is that the Flux is also known as the Phoenix Force, and that's how we get the X-Men back into the MCU. So.
Okay. With or without Deadpool. I'm not sure yet.
I also am looking at that cloud now that we're talking about it a bit more as Vashta Narada on a huge, humongous scale. And who turned out the lights?
I get vibes of like the Vashta Narada teaming up with Stephen King's Langoliers, which was like the cloud that would come over the earth and clean up the past. Every time a moment goes by, the Langoliers would come by and eat the past. So that it was a clean slate.
That is a book I have not read.
It was a short story, I think.
That is interesting.
I think it was part of the 12 Before Midnight collection. I don't know.
Now I know what my research is for the next week.
I was a teenager when I read it. I don't know. Well,
thankfully, we've only got a couple more weeks before we start getting our answers. So
yeah. Yes. So sorry, classic rewatch.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen.
Very excited. Ready for some new Who.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got some good stuff to look forward to, for sure.
All right. Finally, we want to take a moment and step away from the Doctor Who conversation to share some heartbreaking news of a loss within our collective family.
So the four of us actually met many years ago as part of another podcast and online forum community. And a cornerstone of that community was a brilliant and creative friend that we all knew as Juan.
It's with the heaviest of hearts that we mourn his passing. And our love goes out to the entire GWC community, his family, and to his lasting memory.
Juan was a reliable source of help to dozens of us. He was an ambassador for safe and respectful online collaboration. He's a technological genius, a really kind soul, and a very dear friend. We love you. We'll miss you. So say we all.
So say we all.
Next week, we're going to be talking about more Series 13 stuff. You know, any details that we get confirmed are more grounded expectations for what's coming and even more wild postulations.
Yeah, because we would be absolutely nothing if not for shoot-from-the-hip predictions that proved to be entirely false. Right. But Haley's going to be right about the Flux thing.
You realize that in announcing that, we're going to get nothing for a full week, right? We just talk about the same thing just talked about.
Yes, exactly. No, but that's good because we're going to sit there and do a little bit more frame-by-frame analysis. And
when has a lack of new content prevented us from blathering on?
This is true.
Yeah, we pulled our punches on this conversation.
We each take 15 seconds and report back.
There you go.
What was in the background?
So this has been episode 445 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jake saying it's confirmed Ryan Reynolds as the 14th Doctor and Deadpool all at the same time.
And this is Kira saying, if this hasn't taught you never to hand your dog a double-bladed laser broad axe, let this be a lesson to you.
This is Julie saying, Suntarans and Angels and Ood, oh my.
This is Haley saying next week we're going to talk entirely about the flooring that we saw in the trailer.
We'll see you next week.
Alonzi.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Want to keep the conversation going?
You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or just send us a good old-fashioned email to feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also give us a phone call at 754-225-5477. That's 754-CALL-GPR, and you may hear your voice on a future episode of the show. Everything's got to end sometime, otherwise nothing would ever get started. Join us next week for a brand new episode.
Jacob Hansen. Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2021. We'll see you next week.